Now, this week's kitchen science is not one that you can do at home, and it's hopefully not one that you would want to do at home anyway. But earlier this week, we sent Ben Vowsler to meet Gillian Fraser, who's at the Department of Pathology at Cambridge University, to get the lowdown on bacteria.
For kitchen science this week, we decided we'd do something a little different. So really, it's not kitchen science as much as it is kitchen and toilet science. And I'm afraid this is one that you can't do at home. But what we've decided to do is see if there's any truth in the story that there's more bacteria on your kitchen work surface than there is on your toilet seat. So I met up with Cambridge University bacteriologist Gillian Fraser to see how we could test this out.
So when we met a few days ago in a rather nice toilet, what we planned to do was to take some samples from the toilet seat, and we were then going to inoculate these samples onto some growth media that would allow us to grow the bacteria that were present on the toilet seat.
So we took two swabs, which are rather like a long cotton wool bud, and we rubbed one over a toilet seat and one over a kitchen work surface. And then by inoculate, you mean to rub the swab over some agar in a little dish and see what grows on it?
Yeah, so some of the bacteria picked up on the swab would definitely be able to grow in this media. As you can see, if we look at the plates, we've got lots of individual bacterial colonies growing.
So what exactly are bacteria?
Well, bacteria are single-celled organisms, and they're in our environment everywhere. They're pretty ubiquitous. Many bacteria are found on plants and on animals, and of course you and me.
I've heard that actually there's more bacterial cells inside me than there are human cells. How does that happen? Why am I not ill?
That's true. We actually carry many bacteria on our skin surfaces, also in our guts. There are a huge number of bacteria, and these bacteria live together with us as commensals. They don't cause us, under normal circumstances, any damage. In fact, they're very good for us, and they can actually protect us from bacteria that cause disease. So by colonising our surfaces, they can prevent the bad bacteria from being able to stick to those surfaces and grow. The bacteria that cause disease are actually quite similar in many respects to the good bacteria. However, these bad bacteria have acquired traits that enable them to damage the cells in our body, to, for example, release nutrients from our cells that can help the disease-causing bacteria to grow. So, for example, they might produce a toxin that lyses the cells in our bodies.
So the good bacteria has evolved to get the nutrients it needs through working with us, but the bad bacteria gets the nutrients it needs by taking advantage of ourselves and breaking them up and taking what we have.
That's exactly right. And another difference is that our body normally will not raise an immune response. They will not try and kill off the good bacteria normally associated with us. But when a new bacteria, a pathogenic or disease bacterium, comes along, the body will try and clear it by generating antibodies and such like. And this immune response that's generated is also a way that damage is indirectly caused during a bacterial infection.
So do antibiotics kill off all bacteria regardless of whether they're good or bad?
Well, some antibiotics have quite a specific target range of bacteria that they'll kill, but other antibiotics, broad-spectrum antibiotics, can kill off a wide range of different bacteria. And these can include the good bacteria. And in the news recently, you might have seen there's an increasing problem with an organism called Clostridium difficile, also known as C. diff, which can gain a foothold in your gut after prolonged antibiotic treatment has killed off your normal gut bacteria.
Which, of course, is very dangerous for people who are already, for example, elderly or frail, or if they're already ill anyway.
Yes, that's right. But that's not the only problem with prolonged antibiotic use and widespread antibiotic use. What we also see is that pathogenic bacteria can become resistant to antibiotics, and this, of course, is a huge problem. Everybody's heard about methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus.
So MRSA.
That's right. A big problem now in hospitals.
So the plates that we've got here, we have one from our kitchen and one from the toilet seat, and I can see from here that one of them clearly has a lot more sort of speckled patches on it than the other one. The other one looks fairly clean, really. Which one's which?
So the one with lots of bacterial colonies on it came from, not surprisingly, the toilet seat. And it looks like there's roughly about five times as many bacterial colonies have grown up on this plate compared to the plate where we inoculated the sample from the kitchen.
Can we look a bit further into this and see what sorts of bacteria we're getting?
Yeah, so what I was able to do was to take some of the individual colonies from these plates, and I was then able to subculture them, which means to plate them out again, onto different types of growth media that can select for the bacteria that would normally survive within your gastrointestinal tract, so in your intestines. Both of them have an important ingredient, bile salts, and those would normally kill most bacteria, except things like E. coli, which is normally found in your gut, or pathogens like Salmonella or Shigella.
The plate you've used for the original cultures is just a pale yellow colour. I think most people will have seen agar plates that looks like that. One is sort of almost a tobacco-stained dark orange, whereas the other one's quite a rich green. Are these colours there to tell you anything, or is that just the colour they are?
No, they actually tell us something. So the thing that gives the plates the different colours are pH indicators. Now, the reason we put these pH indicators in is to tell whether the bacteria can use certain sugars that are in the plates as foods, because this can allow us to differentiate, to tell apart different kinds of bacteria. So E. coli would give you lovely dark red colonies, whereas Salmonella would give you pale yellow to orange colonies. As you can see from our Lucy sample, colonies have grown up on our selective agar, so we know that probably we've got some enteric bacteria in here. And we also know by looking at the colour the pH indicator has gone, so what colour the colonies are, that these bacteria don't ferment lactose, so we know they're not E. coli, we know they're not enterococci or enterobacteria, which are normally found in your gut. They could be something like Salmonella or something like Shigella, which can both give you diarrhoea.
So there you go. In our tests, we found much more bacteria on a toilet seat than we did on a kitchen work surface, and even some indication that the bacteria that were there could survive inside your intestines. Kitchen Science will be back to normal next week with an experiment that you can try out at home. Until then, though, my thanks to Gillian Fraser, and goodbye from me.
Yeah, that'll make you think twice about walking out of the toilet and not washing your hands, won't it? That was Ben Valsler talking with Gillian Fraser from the Department of Pathology at Cambridge University. And unfortunately, they found on the toilet seat there were bugs like Salmonella and Shigella, potentially. And of course, they will make you very, very ill. So this urban myth that says that you are safer eating your lunch off a loo seat rather than off your kitchen table is probably just that, an urban myth. But we will say it's only one toilet seat that we looked at. And I reckon, Helen, I reckon it was from a woman's toilet.
Excuse me, what do you mean?
Well, no, it can't be men's toilet, because if it was in the men's, men would have peed all over the floor anyway, or peed all over the seat and washed them off.
I always think men's toilets are far more disgusting than girls' toilets. But anyway, if you've been following our forum online, you might have seen that we put up the pictures of the agar plates that we did in the Kitchen Science this week, and we put up a vote to see who thought which one was which. And you were all wrong, pretty much. 11% of you got it right, and you thought the one with more bugs was the one from the kitchen table. So no, I'm afraid we have shattered that myth, I think.
And coming up on The Naked Scientist this week, in a second we'll be talking to Dr. Ali Ashby from Cambridge University. She works on fungi, and we'll be finding out how they actually contribute both to health and disease, not just to humans, but to plants as well.
Sorting out the sparks from the quarks, The Naked Scientists.